This is the Next Level Running Podcast, brought to you by the expert coaches at Rundoyan, helping runners of all levels crush their goals on race day by matching you with the perfect coach or training plan. Hello, and welcome back to the Next Level Running Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Phillips, and we have a great episode for you this month. I sat down with Lisa Dobrisky. Lisa has been competing internationally since the age of 15, competed in two Olympic Games. She knows firsthand what it takes to get the absolute best out of yourself. You know, Lisa, in 2009, she was the silver medalist in the World Championships over 1,500 meters. We sit down, we talk about her entire career, the lessons that she learned as a professional athlete. We talk about the highs and the lows. We talk about what she's up to now. This is a really fun conversation. But before we jump in, I want to point you down to the show notes below. I'm going to have the contact info for Lisa. Look, if you want to crush your running goals, she can help you. Also want to kind of point you to the at Rundoyan Instagram page. We are pumping out some quality info there daily. Check it out. Hit that follow button. You don't want to miss out there. Also, just another reminder, if you haven't yet, join that Next Level Running Facebook community group. It's a place where you can ask for advice. You could read other people's questions and see the advice that they're getting. We're also pumping out some quality content from Rundoyan there. It's just a great community to be part of. And want to plug the podcast a little bit. If you haven't already, and you feel like you want to, we'd love for you to give this podcast a rating. Go to whatever podcast platform of your choice, hit a rating there. Let us know how we can be better. We want to bring quality content to you each month. So now, speaking of quality content, got a great conversation with the great Lisa Dobrisky.
Hi, Jacob. Can you hear me, see me?
Yeah. How are you, Lisa?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. So, before we get kicked off, where are you located?
Right, Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Yeah. So it just.
Are you down in Texas?
Yeah, Dallas. So yeah. It's pretty hot in both places we're in, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like crazy. But ours is very dry, so we don't have the humidity to worry about. So.
Yeah, it's right now it's about 7 o'clock at night. It's 103 degrees. So I mean, it's blazing. So that's hot. Yeah. But it's like probably like what, 110 there?
Yeah, we've had 115 a few days here, and then they had the record streak for the most number of days over 110 recently. So it's usually okay if you get out like half five in the morning to go and run, but it's just not cooling overnight, so it's so hot.
Yeah, that's I'm telling you, I ran at 5:45 this morning, and the heat index was like at 87 degrees already in the dark, you know, and so it's a brutal summer. But thanks so much for jumping on the podcast this month. I was fired up. I mean, like I'm gonna let you talk about yourself, but I was looking at the accomplishments, and you might be the fastest person I've ever talked to. Like that's pretty crazy. Right. And so I'm always like amazed at just the coaches that Rundoyan has brought in. I mean, like, the month before this, I had a chance to talk with Ryan Vail. You know, he's a professional runner. I talked a couple months ago, I talked to, Lindsay Flanagan. She's going to be in Budapest for World Championships.
She's off to the world, isn't she? Yeah,
and so I think like with it's just crazy. Like, and then I'm looking at your resume and I'm thinking, oh, holy smokes! I mean, you're a World Championship medalist. You've been to multiple Olympics and made the final. I mean, like, pretty crazy. And so I thought like this would be a great one just to kind of hear your story, but just kind of pick up on the lessons of an Olympic athlete, right? I mean, because whether you're, you know, a beginner or whether you're pursuing, being elite, I think obviously those lessons kind of, they parallel, but like, I guess like, just kind of tell me, who are you? Where are you from? Like, what makes you you? And then we'll kind of jump into the running stuff, right?
Yeah, sure. So, obviously not American. So, I was born in the UK, and we moved over to the States in 2015. So when I was based out of the UK, I was working with a group of coaches, US coaches, who were within the UK Athletics funding system that we were working with. And then after the 2012 Olympics, I had lots of different injuries throughout my career. And 2012 was one that was particularly difficult for me. So after those Olympics, I kind of had a big struggle kind of getting back. So we sought out the coaches that we had worked with when we were in the UK, and they'd moved back out into Phoenix and set up the World Athletic Centre, which is now known as Altus. So we came out to visit with Dan Fath and Stu McMillan and do some training with those. And then my husband, Ricky, joined their team on the coaching side of things whilst I was still trying to pursue a career in running. And then my career kind of never got back, kind of ended up winding down and moving a little bit more into coaching and other things. But we just fell in love with the States. So we ended up staying. And so we've been based in Phoenix all that time since we came out in 2015. We had a little boy 2.5 years ago. So he's out here with us. But just enjoying the weather and a different way of life. Very different to the UK and sort of what I grew up with. So I'm excited to sort of bring him up in a different environment and see how he thrives. But I kind of started getting into athletics when I was about 15 years old, 14 years old. And then I started competing internationally at 15 in some of the world youth championships. And it just kind of took off from there. I was more sort of 800, 1500, always in those sort of middle distance areas. But a lot of my training was very, you know, we do like longer runs on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And I would just kind of always sit right in the middle with my training. Like I was never on the fast end of things and I was never big on endurance. Mm-hmm. So very sort of specific to the 1500 and the mile. But we got to work with a lot of different coaches and learn a lot about different athletes, because the one thing that I loved about the 1500 in particular is that you can approach it from so many different levels. You can be like on the speed side of things and mm-hmm. be more of an 800 runner, or you can be way up there with like the 5K, even up to 10K, and still run a really, really fast 15. So we had all those sorts of different athletes that I came across that would do such varied training. So there was never really one way to skin a cat in that sense. And that's what I think I really love about coaching and training, is that everybody's unique and everybody has a different skill set and they respond differently to different training methods and different approaches.
So yeah, that's awesome. And I think there's some things that we can unpack there and lead. I was also going to say, like, I think we have kind of a plan to maybe come back in a few months and talk about some other stuff you're pretty passionate about, with the Pilates, the returning from pregnancy running, that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So like that's, yeah. I'm excited about that too. I was actually telling my wife, so my wife was a runner, not international caliber, but we have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and she hasn't run since we had our first kid, right? And so, and like part of that was just like anyways, so we're going to dive into that in a few episodes. But today, did you start running at 13, 14? Or is that just kind of when it became a time to compete? Because to start at 13 and be international level at 15, I mean, that seems like that's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of a blessing and a curse in a sense that it just, I think, obviously at a young age, I was identified as being very talented, more of an 800 when I started, and everything sort of came very naturally to me. I started sort of first year of secondary school, and then I started at an athletic club. So we have a slightly different system at home. So our school system doesn't kind of take you through as much as it does in the States. We have like much more of a club system. So a lot of talent, I think, gets missed. So I was lucky and fortunate enough to sort of find my way into a club system. And within my first season, you know, I medaled at the national schools championship and then the national championship. So it's great, like it sounds like amazing, and then oh, you're talented, and I think people assume that oh, it's just very easy. But the drawback with that was from a very young age, there was a lot of pressure mentally, like from myself, and then also that expectation of just being talented, and then that throwaway comment of like, oh, you're okay because you're so talented. And to me, it's always like, but I do work very, very hard as well, you know. But I still work hard, and I admit that, like, I have been fortunate to have, you know, it just came very natural, and I was straight up there. But the pressure and the it just kind of it's a lot from a young age, and then you kind of continue that. And there were definitely a couple of years in there, I'd say sort of 17 to 18, more sort of around that age, you know, when you hit puberty. I think girls tend to go backwards, boys tend to sort of go forwards. That was really challenging. Like, I changed shape and put on a little bit of weight. And then it just was very hard to stay within the sport. So I was very fortunate to have really good coaches and a really good sort of supportive family that like kept me in the sport. Because I think that's a lot of the age that you see a lot of girls kind of fall out of the sport. So
for yes. Sure. And I think you and I are right around the same age. I think we were both born in, you know, we're not going to say your age, but we were born the same year. Right. And so
oh,
we're
really?
The, yeah, I think I was looking.
You look so much younger than me. So whatever you're doing, I can give you some tips.
I've never been an Olympian before. And, you know, but 8 hours of sleep a night is the secret. And so, yeah, it is. And like, that's, my wife does a tremendous job because, you know, when the kids, you know, you've got a 2.5-year-old, right? And so sleep is not always the easiest thing, but my wife is a trooper in that. But so in 2006, you go to Commonwealth, and which for us in America is kind of a unique thing because we don't really participate in that, right? But it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
And
you win the gold medal in the 1500 meters. And so, and I'm not doing the mental math in my head, but like how old are you, or how old are you when you win this, you know? And I don't know if this is the first major competition, but I mean, like, that's a big deal.
Yes. Yep. So I was 22 at that stage. And I wasn't expecting to win that race. I was just there for experience, and it just, everything just fell into place, and the race just unfolded exactly as I'd have liked it to. And I remember just finding myself in the lead and then suddenly running down the home straight, and it literally went in slow motion. Like, I still am convinced, like, it felt like I had a bubble around me, and it just, time just stood still. And I can still remember that experience, and it's like, yeah, it really did happen like that. So it was pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great to have achieved and experienced that. Yeah.
And so for obviously the audience in America who might not know, I mean, like that, you're racing the Eastern Africans, right? You're racing, I mean, it's pretty much everybody but America, right? Or North America, right?
Yeah, so we have like Australia. It was in Australia. It was hosted in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. We have what do we have? We have India, not all of Europe. So not a lot of Europe in there, but then the home countries. So we would divide the UK up into England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales that would go and compete. So all Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales. So it was, it was the first sort of major international that I'd sort of really been at as a senior athlete.
So, and maybe I just don't know this. So like, that's 2006. So 2005 is the World Championships. Were you at the World Championships in 2005? Okay.
I wasn't. No, I didn't compete at the World Championship that year. So I hadn't made the team. I'd done the World Student Games instead that year. Mm-hmm. And so I used to have a lot of problems, a lot of lower back injuries and a lot of lower back issues throughout my career. And it used to just be a case. Some days it would be, I wouldn't know. I just didn't know who was going to show up because it was a lot of like SI joint issues. Mm-hmm. And I would just feel like I would just completely lock down in my lower back. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like I was running through water some days. So I had a few years where I really struggled with that. And then that's how I kind of got into the Pilates end of things. My physio at the time, we used a Pilates reformer, and we did a lot of work on strengthening like lower core and positioning and holding the pelvis in place a lot better so that there wasn't as much extension in my lower spine and as much sort of impact in those sort of lumbar vertebrae when I was running, which was causing a lot of the irritation and a lot of inflammation in my lower back. So that really, really helped me moving forwards.
And when did you start this? Like in the Pilates stuff?
Yeah. So this was kind of around that 2006, time that we did that. And then 2008, I did a lot more of it. And that was, so 2008 was really my sort of breakthrough year time-wise, going from sort of 405 down to sort of 4 minutes.
Okay.
And I attribute a lot of that to that, just that core stability and that ability to kind of control everything under fatigue. That was the big thing to me, still being able to run when everything else had gone. So my husband always said, when I used to sort of fall apart at the end of a race, it looked like I was running for a bus. Everything would just go and it would just be arms and legs and it would just be a scramble. But that strength and that stability would allow me to sort of stay in alignment and still use my limbs when I got to the final phases of the race.
Well, I love you said control it under fatigue, because like for ultimate performance, I mean, that's what you're really trying to do. I mean, you're pushing yourself to that limit of fatigue and exertion and you've got to stay together. Right. And so,
So I love
that there. And so 2006 gold medal, Commonwealth Games, and then you go to Beijing. Let's back up. So the first time you wear the senior kit at an international, is it the Commonwealth Games 2006?
Yes. Yeah.
And then, and then is the next time Beijing, or did you go 2007 Worlds?
2007, I did go to the Worlds in Osaka. I missed out on the final. What happened there? So I have such a big injury history. So I had torn my plantar fascia going in, and then I'd had a manipulation in my back and broken my rib. Honestly, like, you couldn't make some of the stuff up that's happened. And so that really hindered a lot of my running, because it was like I was really struggling. Like, it was so painful. And then with a plantar fascia, someone stood on my shoe in the race and I lost my shoe. On the same foot that I had torn my plantar fascia. So it was like, I just missed out on the final. So I think at that point, where I placed in that race wasn't really a true reflection of where I was at fitness wise, but it makes 2008 look so much better, because obviously I'd had a bit of a rough time in 2007. So.
Yeah. So you go to Beijing, you run the 1500 and you finish fourth.
Yes.
And so for me, I'm sitting here thinking like, holy cow, fourth at the Olympics. Are you thinking on the other hand and thinking, I just missed out on a medal?
Yeah.
How close was it? I mean, I watched these games, but I don't remember, right?
So no, like, of course.
Was it close? Were you in a good spot to get a medal? Like, do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember. So I don't think I've ever really gotten over it. It was like, it took me so long to over, like, it's probably, I don't think I've ever felt as low after a race as that. Finishing fourth. I think I, in the race itself, it's really difficult to know, because I felt like I judged things really well, but I think maybe I was a little bit too cautious on the final bend. I didn't overtake when I could have overtaken, and then somebody from behind came past. So it's like, it's all hindsight, isn't it? It's like, had I have made that move, would I have held her off? And it's just like tiny splits of a second where you make that decision on the spot. And I can remember making the decision. And at the time, I thought it was the right decision. I thought it was going to come back to me, but it was too late. And I just misjudged it a little bit. And so I still haven't gotten over it, to be honest.
And I'm sorry to bring it up, but maybe my timeline's off, but you come out of the Olympics and you win the Fifth Avenue Mile, right?
Yes.
So a little redemption, right?
You know,
So like, just for kind of our maybe the listeners who don't know, like, how different is it from going in, like, which I'm assuming it's a pretty tactical Beijing Olympic final 1500, to an all-out screaming down Fifth Avenue for the mile. Is it completely different?
It's so different, and that finish line looks so close for so long, and it's so hard to judge your effort. And
yeah.
I really enjoyed it, but it was hard. Like, it was just hard. I just felt like I sprinted the whole way. I literally just felt like I sprinted. Whereas in the 15, I was very much about reserving effort in the early stages, and I was always in control. I always knew split times, how I needed to adjust, and they had the markers, but it was just, everybody was just up there going for it. It was like, it was something I'd not experienced before. So it was really refreshing to go and race like that, like just raw racing like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but it really hurt. It was really
so I would I have one experience like that. It was a road 800. It was a bridge in Dallas that they were, opening, and it was the first one down the bridge. Right. And I called that, and you just blast it from the gun, and you're looking, and it seems so far, but so close. I call it running scared. So at this moment, are you running scared, or are you running confident? Like, you're just after it, right?
Yes. I do remember in that race feeling confident and just being very aware, because it felt like, when you're a child and you just run as fast as you can for as long as you can, it felt like that.
Yeah.
And I was very aware that there were a lot of people around me, and I was very aware that, okay, if I'm starting to hurt, they're starting to hurt too. So I was very aware that a lot of people had probably overcooked it early. So then that's when that confidence that you're explaining comes in that, okay, I don't need to do anything right now. They're going plenty fast enough. I'm just going to take a ride on this and wait till the wheels start to fall off. And then gradually people start to fall back, and then you're able to kind of compare yourself with people that you know should be around you, and you sort of sense how they're feeling and how you're feeling. And
That's interesting. So, and I want to kind of go back to Beijing before we kind of jump into, post Fifth Avenue and then heading into what ended up being a pretty big year, 2009. Right. And so when you're building up for this Olympics, and again, and you qualified for the 2012 Olympics, which was in London. Right. And so I'm sure that was a pretty big deal just because it's home soil. Right. But like going back to this Beijing, and I've never been at this level, and obviously I would probably say 99% of the people who listen to this podcast probably haven't. Like, is that build up to get to Beijing? So let's say Beijing, you're probably racing in August, September. I don't remember the timeline, but like when you get into January, January 2008, are you thinking, okay, it's tunnel vision? Yeah. Like, I mean, is it pretty stressful? Is it just business as usual? What's different between, say that year and then maybe 2009, or is it different? You have Olympics, World Championships, Commonwealth is probably the tiers, right? Is that 2008 January to, again, race day? I mean, is that a big deal? Is that tunnel vision? Is that hard? Is it like, what were you going through, I guess, through those, say, 6 to 8 months getting ready for that?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, Jacob, because the coach, so George Gandhi, who was my coach at that time, was awesome at that kind of mental preparation. Because the thing that you see a lot of the time with something that's that big a deal, you can want something too much.
Yeah.
And that can be so destructive. So in that January phase, he was always great. He was always just like, okay, it's January. We're taking it day by day, week by week. All you have to do, it's business as usual, is get through each week without getting hurt, without getting injured, and just step at a time. And you see it with racing in Olympic year as well. People come out the gate so, so fast, so early.
Yeah.
And then by the time they get to the games, they're cooked.
Yeah.
So we were always very much about the longer game, and then just trying to, obviously that's that little bit of excitement. There's that little bit of extra motivation in the workouts. I would definitely say I took that motivation into the workouts a lot more, but still had that almost that sense of calmness that I can't let this be too big of a thing. You can't let it, you just can't let it run rule, overrun everything.
Because
otherwise it's like you want it too much, and then it just becomes too much of a big deal, and then the pressure of it, and then trying too hard for things, you end up, especially me, I end up getting really hurt or sick, or just the mental side of it. Like it's you can't let it overwhelm you.
So your coach was really good at helping you measure that out throughout the year?
Absolutely. Yes.
That's awesome. And so you talk about the injuries and stuff. And so, like, obviously, you know, you know, you've had some injuries leading into this year, right? Were you healthy for the most of 2008?
The most of 2008, I was, yes. I did have just some issues early on, but it was very minor and very simple. And we sort of cleared them up pretty quickly. So it all went pretty smoothly through 2000 and 2008. And I think just that, the motivation of the Olympics itself, but that sort of measured calmness alongside it just seemed to go hand in hand, and I felt like I got everything right that year.
So when you win Fifth Avenue, is that the end of the season? Are you done at that point? Because that's usually the kind of the end of the pro track season, right? Even though it's not a track race.
Yeah, I think that was. I think we have. I'm trying to remember because we have our Great North Mile back in the UK, which is kind of like before the Great North Run.
Yeah.
So I think I may have gone back and done that race, but it pretty much wrapped up like within a week of the Fifth Avenue Mile from there.
So you have this huge, say, 9 months. So let's just call it 9 months. How long are you recovering before you start the build for 2009 World Championships?
Yeah. So my coach was always about a good 2 to 3 weeks off completely.
Yeah.
No running, like nothing, like just to stay in nice and like active and healthy, but no running, and just trying to enjoy it and catch up on life.
Yeah.
Cause you kind of become a bit of a hermit, you know, you don't go to any events, you are in bed early, you're up early, everything you do, like you're eating well, you're like, so just enjoying life and spending time with family and friends, and then a very sort of nice gradual build up into the winter phase of training.
And so then you go into 2009 and you win a medal. And I read though that you win this medal coming off of a stress fracture.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Tell me, when did you get hurt? What was the stress fracture? Like, how did that play out?
Yeah, so I picked up the stress fracture in December of 2008.
Okay.
It was a sacral stress fracture.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I think the heartbreak from Beijing, I just wanted it a little bit too much.
Yep.
And I just got a little bit too quick. I progressed my mileage a little bit too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then for 2008, I had I was really good at like leaning up for races,
yeah,
and then holding that body weight for a very short time. So I would always race in the early part of the season like a little heavier, and then I'd really tighten it up. I'd worked with a nutritionist; it was done very, very sensibly.
Yeah.
But I don't think I think I was a little bit too lean going into the winter. And then I just increased my mileage and I just got this sacral stress fracture. So, a few things there that were little mistakes. And then I think I had to have 8 weeks off with that because it took a little time to heal. And then it's like gradually loading, and then back into running. And then in the early part of, I think it was a May, I had another femoral stress. I got bone stresses on feet, on both of my femurs. And I don't know how I managed to get those. They just like, but that was causing me a lot of pain. So it was just a lot of cross training. I did so much cross training, and that's something that I continue to do. I bought, it was actually Paula Radcliffe that helped me.
Yeah.
The old fashioned Nordic track skiers, the wooden ones.
Yeah.
So I was doing that.
Yeah.
I could do as much of that as I liked. And it was great for aerobic endurance.
Yeah.
And whenever I went on a warm weather training camp, so I've got one of these Nordic skiers out in Kenya, one in Stellenbosch in South Africa. I've got one out in Font Romeu. I've got one in the south of France. And I've got one in the US. Like, I just took them everywhere with me and just left them. And so they were great because they would really help build endurance. There was no impact and there was no sort of jarring into that lower back. And then I'd progress on to an elliptical, and then we had the Alter G, and then I'd gradually get my way onto running on the ground.
So you have this pretty major hiccup in May, And world champs are, say, September again, right? And so, like, do you feel like the delay, like, obviously, like, how does that unfold? I mean, like, get silver, I mean, that's second place. I mean, like, in the world championships, that's against the best in the world. Like, I mean, so you had to be on, like, so do you feel like it was the cross training? And then, or do you feel like it just timed it perfectly because you didn't overdo it because you were kind of having to be held back? I mean, like, how did that play out?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it was the cross training, and I think I got a lot of a bigger aerobic base than I could have ever done running, because I was quite limited in mileage simply because of, like, I have a hard time with bone densities and I get a lot of bony injuries. So I was always kind of capped, like 64 miles a week was like my magic number. If I did 65 or 66, I was injured. So that was like my limit, and obviously I learned that the hard way. But the skiing and the aqua jogging and the elliptical, like, there was no limit to that. So I could away with like a 2-hour ski, but to run 2 hours within my weekly program that I had would have been a little bit too much, with everything else that I had. So I think aerobically, I just got a lot stronger. I would replicate a lot of my workouts on the watt bike, on the elliptical. So I was able to still keep the intensity. But then I just felt like after Beijing, in terms of mindset, like, I couldn't fail. Like, I couldn't not medal. It just wasn't an option. Like, I couldn't go through that again. So I think it was just sheer determination over everything else.
I mean, that's all. I mean, it's, yeah. So you come out, you go to the World Championships. So where was it in 2009? I'm drawing a blank.
It was in Berlin.
Okay. Yeah. So you go out and you get the silver medal. I mean, and did the race play out how you envisioned it? Was it sheer guts to get to the finish line? Like, how did that play out?
Yeah, so the race was actually really interesting. So I was a little bit more aggressive in the race than I was in Beijing. So I was like up there a little bit more and a little bit more prepared for the break. But then on the last turn, on the last bend, the athlete, one of the athletes pushed an athlete and she fell. So there was this big fall just right in front of me. So I kind of had to go round. And then the winner of the race, who was first, was then disqualified, which meant I actually finished third in the race. From second, but I was 0.001 of a second away from second. So then I was like, this is fine. I'm happy with this. Like, the bronze medal was more than enough, more than I wanted. So then I go into the media zone, and then the only question I'm asked is, how does it feel to miss out on being world champion by 0.00?
Oh.
Like, I didn't win the race. So I wouldn't have wanted to win the race in that way. But it's like, all the time, it's like, how does it feel to finish fourth? How does it feel to be that close? It's like, but it didn't feel, it didn't even enter my head, because it was like, no, I got the medal and that's all I wanted. That's all I needed.
So you get this medal, and do you feel like it's like, man, the years that you've put in. So at this point you're, say, 25, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah.
So yeah, like, no, yeah. And so, like, I mean, is it like, man, that last 12 years of, you know, starting at the age of 13, like, it was worth it for this medal? I mean, does it feel in that moment, does it feel worth it?
It really does. It feels like it was just really special. And like, it was very different to the Commonwealth, because the Commonwealth was this big surprise.
Yeah.
And I think it was almost like more of relief and redemption in this moment from the Beijing Olympics. So it just felt very, very different. I would say more relief than like elation. I was just like, okay, I've got this now, and it's like, it was worth it. And there'd been a lot of like heartache and a lot of tears and a lot of stress. So to actually have that there, and like the people that had gone through that with me and worked with me, it was just really nice to be able to share that and have that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, like, you know, sometimes, you know, when you go through that heartbreak, I think the lesson here is you just had this, I'm not going to be stopped, right? I got hurt. Okay, guess what? We're going to cross train, and I'm not going to be denied, because I want that medal, right? I don't want to feel what I felt in 2008 again. And I think that's, Like that's the heart of a champion, right? That we talk about, right? And that's what separates someone like you from someone like me, right? Like I would have been like, oh, you know, I can just do the, you said, no, I'm going to get to work and I'm going to make it happen, which is pretty awesome. So jump ahead 2012. I mean, we've jumped a couple of years here, but like London Olympics, that's the soil, right? I mean, like, was that pretty special just to be there, be at home and do that?
Yeah. Yes, very much so. And I don't know, it's just very, very different. And it was very surreal having that, being at home. And then again, that, I don't know, just that pressure was very different too. Like the pressure of that was very, very hard.
So was there high pressure?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of pressure, just feeling like you're on home soil and everybody, all the people that never really took an interest now suddenly take an interest in athletics and they're all experts all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
So is it one of those things though, like, you know, was it different from say Beijing and, you know, Berlin in 2009? Was it different? Like, are you in a different spot as an athlete at this point?
So I had had another pretty rough build-up. So I'd had to have surgery in 2011, in the September of 2011, on a hip issue.
Okay.
And as a result, in the February, I had picked up a vertical line stress fracture in my femur. So it went undetected for a while because the line was vertical, so it wasn't showing up on the MRI imaging. Mm. So I wasn't able to run until, I think it was about May. And then I have a clotting issue with my blood. So I had a bilateral pulmonary embolism. Mm. So I wasn't allowed to run. That I couldn't run until that resolved.
Wow.
So there was a lot going on.
You're dealing with it. I mean, like, you're...
So there was a lot of health issues and a lot of injury issues and concerns there. And I really didn't think I was going to make it. But again, like I couldn't not do it. I couldn't not go to a home Olympics. So it was just like back on the skier, back on the cross trainer. And we found a hematologist that was great and would come out. And like I had to have somebody monitor oxygen levels when I was training to make sure that everything was okay. And we were able to work through that, which was all done very carefully. Like I would never advise anybody to run if they have like pulmonary embolism, unless you have very, very good medical support. And,
Yeah.
Medical and you, team that can continue to.
Yeah. And you're being monitored, you're a professional athlete. I mean, it's a little different story, right? But so the Olympic final, you make the final and, and it turns out, like, I think you finished ninth or 10th, but it turns out that a handful of those ladies get disqualified eventually, right?
Because they were cheating, right?
And so, which is so unfortunate, right? But like, it just goes to show you, you know, like, you know, you walk away one day and it's like, well, I'm ninth or 10th in the Olympics. And then a decade later, it's like, oh, actually I'm fourth or fifth again. Right. And like, So as an athlete, like in the moment, you know, right. Like in the moment, it's not level. Right. And so like, does that discourage you in the moment? Or do you just say, I'm just going to keep working? Like what's the mindset of a champion there? Right.
Yes. So in that race, it was very different because I knew they were cheating. I'd expressed concerns to the IAAF and they'd confirmed that they were cheating, but the email I got back was the Olympics comes too soon. And then they ended up catching them later down the line.
Yep.
I got into a little bit of trouble because I was very vocal about it. It was fair. Yeah. But all I can do is race the athletes that turn up on the day.
Yeah.
I knew going into that race that I wasn't in the best shape that I could be in, mm-hmm. simply because of everything that had gone on. But I'd made the final. So the final to me was like a medal. Like I didn't think I was going to get into the final. So to just be there and to compete there was amazing. It was absolutely terrifying. I've never been so scared on a start line ever. It was so, so terrifying. But I did it. I can hold my head up high and say, I've never cheated. I've never taken anything I shouldn't have done. And I did my best. And that was the result I got on the day. And it was a very different feeling to Beijing, where I felt like I'd misjudged my effort and I'd made a mistake. And I was in awesome, awesome shape to be in here sort of feeling like I was kind of running with my hands behind my back. And then I wasn't on a level playing field. So very, very different experiences. But nevertheless, like, very proud to have competed in a home Olympics. So
no doubt. And like, I mean, and like that was the year where, you know, several of the Great Britain athletes, they just did really well, right? And so like, it's like, it was super exciting. I mean, right? Like, it was
it was,
yeah. And like, I'm sure the roar of the crowd is something you'll never experience again, you know, kind of thing, right?
exactly.
Like that's crazy, right? And so to get to live that. So I have here, and so are you good to carry on? Like, if we've got to restart the Zoom, are you good? Because like, I want to get into this lesson. So we'll probably go for another minute, and then I'll stop the recording, and then I can edit all this out and stuff. But but so let me actually, so let me do that. Let me go ahead. We're at a good stopping point. I'll send another link, and let's keep going. That sound good?
Are you sure? I know I talk a lot. I'm sorry.
No, this is great. So my assistant coach, I was telling her, I was like, you'll never believe who I'm getting to chat with, like silver medalist in this. And she was like, oh my gosh, you know, like this is really cool. So no, this is really fun. So I'm a track geek, man. Like I love this stuff. So, so I'm in this, and then I'll send you another link.
Awesome. Okay? Thank you.
You there?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So we were talking about, you know, you're at the home Olympics. So you guys moved to Phoenix in 2015. It sounds like maybe from 2012 to 2015, a lot of injury issues. Is that correct?
Yes.
So let's say, so again, I'm trying to do mental math. So we're about 30 years old, right? Coming out of the Olympics, right? About. And so like at this point, like, and I don't know how hard or easy it is to talk about these things. Again, I was never at your level, but like, was it one of those things where it's like, how much longer can I do this? How much longer do I want to do this? Like, where were you at, I guess, coming out of the home Olympics? It's not going to be back in, you know, I think Paris is what, 2024. I mean, like, that's a long time. Right. And so, so like, what's your thoughts as a professional athlete still pursuing goals? Is it like, man, I'm kind of on the back end of this, or I've still got good years left? What does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt like there was more to go and that I had more time.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believed that I was going to get back and be healthy again. I think the problem I'd had was I'd had this surgery in my hip, and it kind of, I just didn't move in the same way, which was why I got that stress fracture in the femur. It just meant that there was just too many like shearing forces. And I just didn't have that. I just didn't have my rhythm anymore, and I just didn't flow.
Yeah.
And then I just kept picking up these like really silly little injuries that I'd never had before, like calf tears. And then 2013, I got back to a reasonable level of fitness. And then I competed in our trials for the world champs, but I had a tear in my plantar fascia. And the decision was made that we would do, the team doctor that I was working with at UK Athletics would do a local anesthetic into the site so that I could race, because I couldn't run, I couldn't push up on my foot.
Yeah.
And so they did the local anesthetic, and then I went into the race, and I got like 600 meters in, and I was great. I was running, like I was bouncing. I felt like, oh, okay, this is I'm back to me.
Yeah.
And then I had this pop like through my body, and it just ruptured.
Yeah.
And so I never really got back from that. Like, I kept trying, and I think at that sort of age, I was just at a point where I was just getting further and further away from where I needed to be. And then I just kept going and kept trying in the hopes that it would come back, and it just never did. And it was hard, but I wish looking back that I had have made the decision sooner to walk away, or gone into, because I follow like people of my sort of era, and I see like Jenny Simpson. She kind of went more into like half marathon and more longer running for races. I don't think I would have ever survived the mileage that I would have needed to have done that as well competitively. But I think just changing direction a little bit at that point would have really helped me, because I think from about that 2013 right through till, oh my goodness, like 2018, like I was just trying and trying and trying, and just so depressed, like so down, like mentally and physically, like just the anxiety that would go into every single run because I couldn't hit the times that I needed to, like it didn't feel like it used to. And so that having gone from, like I said, when it was, you know, like the blessing and the curse of being talented as a youngster and everything just falling in your lap and just feeling like you run on water when you go out and run, to then being like, what's wrong with me? Why doesn't this work anymore? Why can't I do this anymore? Like, so that was really, really hard and to try and deal with that. So yes.
Well, you know, I again, not at the professional level, but I went through the same thing around the age of 34. I just felt like my body started failing me, right? And I was a very high mileage runner. I was 120 to 130 miles a week, and I was running a lot, and it was hard. I mean, like it was like the anxiety of like, wait, is this going to work today? Kind of thing, right?
Yes.
And I think,
show up today.
And that was to me, I was almost like, I just wish I either can't do it. Or because like the unknowing of like, okay, is it's super interesting. I watched a documentary or something with Ryan Hall one time, and he was talking about watching his dog just run free chasing something, right? And he was like, I don't know that I'll ever feel that again. And that was what was hard for me. It was like, will I ever feel this floating feeling like what you were just talking about? Will I ever feel that again? Probably not, right? And that's what drew me to it, right? Was that running, like you said, like running like a child, you're just running all out, right? And you feel good and you're floating. And that was what was hard for me. And so I guess, and I don't know. So do you run much at all anymore? Like what? Yes. You still run.
Yeah. I still run. Yeah.
Just for health? Or are you training for things? Like, what does that look like?
Just more for health. Yeah. I would love to get back in and race like a half marathon or something like that later down the line. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting on our coaches call that we had, when Mark said that he had an athlete that had new PRs post a certain age. So I really took that on board and I was like, I should really look at it that way.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's only recently. So my husband was like, I couldn't have a Garmin. I couldn't wear anything that gave me any feedback or any information. It was only this last December that I was like, I really love to like track things and monitor things and just so I'm aware of what's going on. And it really wasn't as bad as I thought. I really wasn't running as slowly as I thought I was. But then I got a little bit, I get so like hooked on it and it's like, oh, how would it feel to run that pace again? Hard is it to do it? So it's like I try and keep it very light and very low-key and very much on my terms. I'm trying not to build in too much structure and too much intensity and get back into that again. But I think at some point I will come around, and because I miss it. I do. I love.
I was going to ask you. Like what do you miss the most from? Obviously, you're running, but what do you miss the most from? Say that era of time where, I mean, it's your whole life, right? I mean, you're living around these goals, right? And so, like, what do you miss the most from that time period?
Yeah, just that I didn't even have to think. Like, the hardest thing right now is waking up in the morning and having the decision, do I go for a run or do I stay here or do I do something else? Or, like, it just happened. Like, there was never any question. Like, I knew what I was doing on a Tuesday. I knew what I'd do Wednesday morning. And it all just fell into place. And even when I was injured, like, if I couldn't run, I was on the cross trainer. Like, I just knew every segment of my week. It just happened, and it was that rhythm and that structure and that routine, and it was so easy just to follow it and just do it, and it just always took care of itself. Whereas now there's just, it's hard to like have the choice and that it really doesn't matter if I don't run today. It really doesn't matter. And do you feel the same, Jacob? What do you miss about?
You know, so like I love the structure. I love the structure of life. I miss the feeling of you're just out for a run and, you know, you're kind of running home and it's like, wow, you're picking the pace up, but you're not really pushing any harder. And it's almost like you're floating. That is truly what I miss. like I miss traveling to races. I miss I mean, like you, like because so I turned 40 in May, and so like I'm now a master's runner, right? And I thought maybe I'll come back and try to compete as a master's, right? And do this new, and I haven't raced since 2015. 2015 was my last like real race. And so like a couple of weeks, so I'd been pretty consistent this summer and had built back, not high mileage, but probably running 30 miles a week or something. And I thought, maybe I can do the cross country championships in December, the club championships that we have here in the US in December. And like, so 2 weeks ago, I said, okay, I'm gonna start like training. Tuesday, Thursday, I'm gonna do some work. And then Saturday, I'll have a good long run. And I've done that for 2 weeks, and I don't like it. I thought, yeah. And so now I'm like, I should just go back to the building the mileage back up, because that's what I really enjoyed. Like, I'm just going out and I run to feel every day, right? And if I feel good, I finish faster. If I feel terrible, I just kind of run easy. But I agree with you, like, it's hard waking up and knowing, like, man, I'm kind of tired. Do I really want to get the run in? And this was the first time since probably this summer was the first time since 2015 that I actually went to bed excited about the next day running, right? Like, because I started feeling that feeling back again, right? I kind of ruined it the last 2 weeks. And so like, And so now I'm like, nope, I'm just going back to running. And I live on a beautiful road. I love running my road, And so, for me, it was like that feeling of just like being so fit, aerobically fit, that you could just float, kind of turn this back, like, obviously a long life of running, and running at a, not just running, but running at a high level. What do you feel like are some of, and I'm gonna ask you several questions, but I'm gonna give you plenty of time, right? What do you feel like are some of the first off, let's take it this route, because you're now in the States. And so like, we do it a different, like you said, like, the club system in the UK is not as, you're missing some people. I also think here in the States, like when you get, like, we put a lot of pressure on kids at a very early age, right?
Yes. Yeah. I volunteered at some high schools, and I was so surprised at how much these younger athletes were doing at so young and so early in their running career. I was very surprised.
And now it's almost like from the middle school type of age to the college level. I mean, it's almost like some of these kids are professionals, right? I mean, they're racing and traveling across the country. So thinking about your experience, the pressure, the expectation, like, what advice would you give? Let's just say these high school girls who are these phenoms in the States, like, what advice would you give them to have the longevity? Because you had longevity, right? Like, I would call your career a long career. Like, what advice would you give them to find longevity in this sport?
Yeah, I think just being patient. And I mean, for me, like, I was so lucky with the coaches that I had that really nurtured me. Because I could have easily, like, even in the UK, like, we have groups where there are athletes that are just burnt out at such a young age that they do so many miles, so much mileage. Like, when I was training, like, I think I did my first like 30-minute run at like 18.
Oh, wow.
Like, I wouldn't do runs. I would just go to the track twice a week, and then we would race Saturdays and Sundays. Like, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So it was very, very limited. And I think, I mean, there's good and bad in that. I think it really helped with speed, and I think sometimes too much mileage too young can kind of kill that natural speed that you have. But just, and then still wanting to be competitive at the same time. So it's so hard.
Yeah.
But just knowing that if you do want that longevity, it is a long game, and you don't need to do everything in the first year or so. Like, you can take your time, and as long as you can see routes to progress and like ways that you can progress and build mileage, build volume, like, you're on to a winner. If you feel like you're doing everything you possibly can at sort of like 14, 15, then, you need to kind of assess where you're at and what you're doing.
Yeah. How would you progress, right? Like, you want to, if you want the longevity. I love what you said about the the too much mileage too soon and the speed, like really those younger years are when you can really learn how to run fast, right? Like in terms of like speed fast, right? And like, because you can't just pound the mileage. And so it's a great opportunity to focus on technique and form and those sorts of things, which could be really fun, right? It might not be fun to send a 13-year-old out for a 10-mile run, right? But you can say, oh, today we're going to do wickets and we're going to do drills and we're going to do these things, right? And you can build a stronger athlete with a really good, you know, focus on posture and core and on form and like, you know, and like, and then you can add the mileage and you can build them up and they, and then they have that speed to use, you know? So I think that's great advice. So through your career, you talk about these great coaches. What do you think makes a great coach? That's a loaded question,
that's a great question.
Because you've had great coaches, right? Like so maybe some traits. It doesn't have to be the exact thing, but maybe some traits that make a great coach in your mind.
Yeah. So everything. So in my younger years, I had Stella Bandu and then Ted Hawkins at Ashford, which was my club, my home club. And exactly what you said there, Stella was wonderful with drills, and we would do a lot of drill work, a lot of sort of speed work. She was very, very protective, but in a really empowering way. Mm-hmm. So she never smothered me and like babied me. She made me feel strong and independent, but in the same way, she wasn't fazed by comments about me not doing enough mileage or like, and having Stella, she was a female coach, and as a female coach, like way back then, like she was a minority, and she was tough. Like she stood her ground and she did what she believed was right for me. And took on anyone that came towards us, you know. So I really admired that and respect that. And she just cares. She just cared about me, and that was the big thing. And then George Gandhi, when I went to Loughborough University, he's patient, such a patient man. And that was the same in training, like in racing, and then just his whole plan. Like he had such a long-term goal, and he would always say, it's not the Olympic final. Like any race, it was not the Olympic final. And then when it was the Olympic final, I was like,
there it is.
He was just very methodical, very patient, never panicked, very calm. And again, genuinely cared about me. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a race and it hadn't gone very well. And he wrote me these like two A4 pages of pros and cons about the race and was like, it didn't matter. He was like, there's so many good things to take from this. And just never feeling like one race was everything, and patience and just not putting so much pressure on one race or one workout, or and especially if you like, so most of us distance runners are like type A and like very anxious, stressed, and that calmness and patience have been the things that I've really admired in coaches.
That's
my husband went on to coach me. And he was exactly the same, like just very patient, very calm, and just let me sort of didn't in that same as Stella, like doesn't smother you and try and protect you and like do everything for you, but stands up for you and like, no, this isn't right for you. This is why, explains things and then empowers you to make those smart decisions.
Is it one of those? So were y'all married and then he started coaching you?
So Ricky started taking over. He took over in end of 2010. Mm-hmm. And it was going great, and then I had the surgery on my hip and he's had such a hard time. So he had to deal with all of that. So surgery in September, stress fracture in February, pulmonary embolism, and then the Olympics in
2012.
So he had a pretty tough.
But was it one of those things where it's like, you know, like, okay, we're at training, I'm coach, and now we're at home. Was it a good balance of that? Or like, cause like, you know, you hear about, you know, Seb Coe, you know, he was coached by his father, Peter, and Peter's like, I can't coach unless you live with me, cause I need to know what's going on, how you're feeling, you know, like, so you do get that. I mean, obviously, you know, that's hey, I know what you're doing. I know how well you slept. I know what you're eating. I know all these things and stuff. And so, but good balance there.
Absolutely. I mean, he could coach me, but I would not, he couldn't, I couldn't have coached him. He gotcha. Just would not, it would have not worked.
He's yep,
just,
yep.
No, it just couldn't have worked. But for me, it was just, it just seemed to work really, really well. And
that's awesome.
I really value his opinion. And he never, again, very calm and never makes a really big deal out of anything. So it's always just very reassuring. That calmness just so reassuring to me.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing I really admire and I look for in a coach is that calm.
That's awesome. Yeah, calm, caring, patient. Yeah, that's awesome. I think that you nailed it there. So now kind of turn around a little bit, like going back to the athletic side of things, what was your favorite workout? If tomorrow you could walk out that door and you could run, you know, and I didn't even name your PRs, and correct me if I'm wrong. So 2 flat for the 800, right?
Yeah.
3:59 for the 1500, right?
Yeah.
And then 8:47 for 3K?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, you're flying, right? And so, like, you walk out the door tomorrow and you have that fitness and that speed, like, in those legs, what workout are you doing? And you're not going to get hurt.
Not going to get hurt.
You're not going to get hurt. What workout?
So, there's, what's the track one? The track workout that I used to love was you would do 3 400s off of 30 seconds.
Okay.
And they would be, I would always be able to run them a touch under my 15 pace. Mm-hmm. So the best I've ever done that, I think, was 59, 60, and then 62.
Wow.
And then you have 5 minutes recovery, and then you do 2 4s with 1 minute recovery, and you try and get that more 800 pace, so that's quicker. And I think the best I did that was at 57 and then 59. And then you have 10 minutes recovery, and then you do a 400, like, fast. But I was never that speedy, so I'd be about 56 for that. So that was my, that was like, it hurts. It
yes.
Really hurts. But it's like, you're running so fast, and it just feels so good.
I mean, that's highly intense. I mean, you were talking, you know, a mile and a half at what ultimately ends up being sub 60 second pace. That's rolling, right? Like, that's good.
So
you want the pain, you want the intensity. You don't want the 10 mile tempo run or anything like that, huh?
No.
Nice.
The thing I liked about tempos, the tempos are great when you're fit. Mm-hmm. We would do a lot of tempo work in the winter. So we would have like a lot of winter stuff. And going into the winter, I was always, because my season used to finish a lot later than my training group.
Yeah.
I would always come in, like, having had that break, whereas they would always be a month or so ahead of me because they would have wrapped up sort of early August.
Yeah.
I used to just, some of the tempos, I would just be hanging on for dear. They were not tempos at all. They were like absolutely flat. Like, it would just feel horrible.
Yeah.
And when you were fit and they were going, like, you were on the pace, it felt fine. But tempos when you're not quite as fit as you want to be are really painful.
Yeah. No. So, I really just two more questions and then we can wrap up or whatever. But, so the first one is like, you know, more of a serious question. So going back, you know, you're that 13-year-old girl, like, obviously you've worked really hard, but you've got this talent. They observe, hey, like, man, like, you can be great at this. Do you think there's anything that you know now that you wish you'd have known then to have either been better or, you know, been healthy, whatever it could be? Like, what do you think if you could go back, you know, the biggest maybe lesson that you've learned over this career of yours, and you could tell that 13-year-old girl and say, hey, do this, like, what would that be?
I think I would just enjoy it a little bit more without all the pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And just like, I think just be happy and just enjoy it. And it's not as a big deal as you think it is. And just take a little bit more pleasure in, like you're saying, those workouts and that feeling that you get, because there is a day when you, like you're saying, you won't have that anymore. And it's really sad and it's really hard when you don't have that. And you take it for granted. And just that, I think at that young age, like that you're just so brave because you don't have that experience. Like all the workouts are new and everything you do is new and the races are new. So you're a bit bolder in what you try and just have fun. And it's fine. Like if you have a bad run or you don't do something right, it's really okay. Like it's not as big a deal as you think it is at that time.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's great. Yeah, it's like, you know, like, and like, it's interesting because I'm a college coach. So like coach at the collegiate level and like my alumni, a lot of times when we'll talk about, you know, just their time at our school, a lot of times they don't talk about the school record that they might've run or being all American. They talk about the experiences. Right. And sometimes we put so much pressure on ourselves that we're not even allowing ourselves to enjoy that experience. Right. Like, you know, you mentioned earlier, you went and trained in Kenya, you went and trained in Font Rameau, if you got that tunnel vision on, maybe you miss out on these great experiences that, you know, like, I mean, I've never been to those places, you know, it's like, it seems pretty cool. Right. And so, final question, kind of a dumb one, but like, any desire or did you ever have the desire to run the marathon?
I would love to run a marathon if I didn't think it would break. I would love to run a marathon, but I'm like, I bounce when I run. Like I am so boundy and I have tried so hard to like shorten out my stride and run, but it just looks, I just can't get it. So I would love to run a marathon. So maybe one day if I can figure out how to like stay healthy. But there's just, I mean, I just don't know if I would survive the training for it. And then if I did the race, I don't know if I would survive the race. So, but I would love to run the marathon.
you know, sometimes you talk to those true middle distance types and they're like, no desire at all, you know, but I was curious, but Lisa, this was great. I mean, this is awesome. I mean, like to have a truly Olympic life, right? Like that's super cool. And like you know, you can read the stats, but like, I think the biggest thing is like just listening how you had to overcome so much to get to that level, whether it was injuries or illnesses or whatever it might've been, or even in 2012, maybe an unfair, you know, field. Right. But like, I think like that heart of the champion just kind of comes through. And so like, that's something to be super proud of. Like, I hope you're proud of that career. Cause like, that's super exciting. And I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on the podcast, for this this month, and it was great.
Thank you, Jacob. It's been a pleasure, and I definitely need to get your anti-aging cream or whatever you're having.
I'm telling you, 8 hours of sleep and every night.
I promise
8 hours of sleep. But I'm really looking forward to scheduling and talking a little bit more about the Pilates and yoga and strength side of things and talking about that. And I think like obviously, it sounds like you've got, you know, massive experience of trying to build that running body back when it's been broken. Right. And I think that's going to be a great conversation too. So Lisa, this was fun. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
You too. Take care. Thank you.
Yep. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that does it for this month's episode of the Next Level Running Podcast. I want to thank Coach Lisa Dabrisky for her time, her energy, her passion. I hope you enjoyed this conversation because there was a lot of great nuggets of wisdom, a lot of lessons to be learned. You know, I actually plan on having Lisa back on the podcast this spring as we discuss things that are yoga, cross training, returning from pregnancy related. She's just got so much passion and so much knowledge. We're going to have her back and we're going to explore some of these topics that aren't exactly training or running related. But the supplemental things that can make you a better runner, keep you healthier. Anyways, I'm excited to have her back. She's just a wealth of knowledge there. So yes, thanks Coach Lisa for joining us again tonight. Hey, look, next month we're going to have another great episode for you. So make sure you tune in on the 26th of every month. We're going to drop these long form podcasts where I sit down with a guest and we discuss training, their careers. You know, we got some great coaches here at Run Doyen and so I've really wanted to highlight some of their careers in running, you know. And so, so join us next month. We'll have another great expert coach on here talking training, talking all things running. But thanks so much for joining along each month. We really appreciate that. Really appreciate you having you here. And until next time, have a great run. Thank you for joining us here on the Next Level Running Podcast, your source for training advice from the expert coaches at Run Doyen. If you're ready to take your training and racing to the next level, head over to RunDorian.com and get matched to your ideal coach who will provide you with the highly customized online training you need for crushing your goals on race day.